Lost and Found. Found and Lost and Lost Found.
Hallo und willkommen zur zweiten Stunde Lost and Found hier auf der 95.8 bei Radio Z in der März-Ausgabe 2023. In dieser zweiten Stunde sind wir auf den 73. Internationalen Filmfestspielen in Berlin unterwegs. Es erwarten euch Interviews und anderes mehr aus der 46. Ausgabe der Sektion Generation auf der Berlinale. Ich wünsche viel Vergnügen beim Zuhören, am Mikrofon und Technik Chris. Von 16. bis 26. Februar fanden die 73. Internationalen Filmfestspiele in Berlin die Berlinale statt. Zum 46. Mal gab es die Sektion Generation auf der Berlinale und wir steigen sofort ein mit einem der Gewinnerfilme, Adolfo, der den Gläsernen Bären der Jugendjury bekam in der Sektion Generation. Ein Film von Sophia Aoussa, die wir jetzt im Interview hören.
So it was a crystal bear for your film. Are you happy?
Yes, happy and very surprised.
Do your main protagonist already know you won?
No, he has no idea. Only Rocío knows, but I'm so excited to tell him.
The movie Adolfo is here now at the Berlinale. Where is it going next?
I think the next place we're going to see it is in TIFF Next Wave, which is going to be around April, I think.
Did you expect anything from the youth jury, as maybe a special mention or...?
No, I just thought like, wow, how amazing that we got to show here, but it was so impossible in my mind that we could get any type of recognition, so really exciting.
Can you give us a few short words about the movie and your relation to the story of these people?
It's a movie that I think was made with a lot of love from a team of people who are mostly making their first feature. So it's my first feature, it's the DP's first feature, the production designer, the wardrobe designer, our actress, Rocío. So it's a film that is really special to us, and it's a film that was done with a lot of kindness from everybody in the crew, and we're just like so excited to be here.
Lais Santos Arujo aus Brasilien bekam für ihren Film Infantaria den Spezialpreis der Generation 14 Plus internationalen Jury für den besten Kurzfilm. Hier hören wir die Regisseurin im Interview.
Did you enjoy the festival and the prize?
I did enjoy a lot. It was my first time at Berlinale and I saw a lot of great films and I got to know the festival, which is incredible and was very important for our movie as well.
The movie is very interesting because it has so many layers. Was it already intended in the script at the beginning, or did you realize later, okay, there are more layers than I thought?
I think I did want quite a few layers, but when you start making it and other people put their eyes on it, they see other things that maybe you hadn't seen before. But it was intended to be a movie that there was a lot going on, so I'm glad that they talked about that when they gave the prizes.
And it's about a family as well. It's about strong women and strong children and a child who wants to be a woman. You could say that, or am I wrong?
No, you can say that. It's about a child who wants to anticipate her puberty, but she doesn't know yet what happens as a woman when you started growing old and you became a teenager and then an adult, and then there's another teenager who is going through something that, because of Brazil laws, we don't have like abortion laws, she has to find a way to resolve her unwanted pregnancy at the same time.
So is that what inspired you to write the script?
What inspired me?
Yeah.
I think I was inspired by everything I saw around me in Brazil, this conservative atmosphere that was growing stronger during the Bolsonaro years. Unfortunately, and also the magical part is about how I see, I think, Brazil in a little, I think that Brazil is a country, a very complicated country with a lot of issues, and everybody knows that, but there's always, to me at least, there's a little bit of magic going on when in the streets and in the landscapes, and I think that I mixed it, and that's how it went.
Is there change coming now, or is it very slow because of the past few years with Bolsonaro?
A change? I think yes. Ever since Lula was elected president, things are, I think that are already in a better way. But what Bolsonaro did in the last 4 years was very destructive, and we are still trying to kind of recuperate and resolve everything that he tried to destroy, from our education system to our cultural funding, for example. But I do think that we are gonna get over him, because he was the worst president in the history of Brazil. Along with the dictatorship presence, but he's not enough to overcome Brazilian people, I think.
And this was a point in your movie as well, because you had to fight and to ask colleagues for the financing as well. It wasn't easy to finance your movie.
No, and one of the reasons it wasn't easy was because when Bolsonaro was in power, he actively tried to stop film funding, and he tried to slow everything down. However, there was this emergency law called Lei Aldir Blanc, which was supposed to give a little support to artists and to keep the cultural production going. So it was with this funding that we made the movie.
So where's the movie going next? It's a short film. I know it's hard to find somebody who distributes it, but is it coming to TV or traveling around the world?
Yes, there's two festivals that I can talk about because they released the information, but we're going to Dresden here in Germany, to Dresden Film Festival, and then we're going to, no, I think first we're going to Cartagena, which is a festival in Colombia. So it will be the first festival in South America outside of Brazil that we're playing, and I'm very excited to show there. Yeah.
Is there going to be a full feature film about the theme?
In fact, I'm writing it, because I think there's a story that can come through this short one, but I think the short film is a film in itself. Yeah, but yes, there's a feature script going on right now.
Jupe Clark bekam für ihren Film Sweet Ass den gläsernen Bären der Kinderjury auf den internationalen Filmfestspielen in Berlin in der Sektion Generation K+. Der Film kommt aus Australien und es ist ein Reisefilm, eine Busreise mit jugendlichen jungen Erwachsenen, die alle in ihrer Familie oder andere Probleme haben. Sie sollen auf der Reise ein wenig zusammenwachsen, was Positives erfahren und gleichzeitig das Thema Fotografie kennenlernen. Die Regisseurin hört ihr jetzt im Interview.
But we're here for the movie Sweet Ass.
Yes, we are. It's very exciting being here in Berlin.
How is it at the Berlinale, the movie premiered, and how did you like the reaction of the audience?
I was so surprised by the audience reaction. I didn't know how my little old story from Western Australia would translate in Germany. And it was like, I think, the biggest cinema we'd shown in, and it was like 3/4 full. I thought there'd be 12 people at 9:30 in the morning. And I walked in and I was like, oh my God, look at all these people and their reactions. I sat in and watched the film. I love watching the film. And I sat in and heard the reactions, and everybody was just going on this amazing journey with us, and it was incredible. And they just clapped and clapped through all the credits. And it was just the most beautiful questions after, from all the different age demographics. It was extraordinary. It blew my mind away, actually. Yeah.
You're telling your story by a road movie. So the people and the kids, is it okay to say
young
the kids?
Adults?
The young adults,
yeah,
are on the road together, even if they don't want to.
Yeah, I know. We mix up a whole lot of people, don't want to be traveling together on a bus and see what happens. it's really interesting how, because I went on the trip myself when I was 14. And so that's, of course, where the story's inspired by. And it was such a profound, amazing moment for me and changed my life. I'm here today, I think, because of it, a big part of it. And so I wanted to see how that would translate into, you know, this incredible story of these four young adults and these two beautiful minders and who have got all their own demons themselves and life experiences. And putting that all together in this great tale about courage and human spirit and unrequited love and all the messy stuff that makes being a young adult and an adult.
Is it, you say you did it yourself, so is it usual to do this 7 days in the wilderness?
I've never heard of a trip like this being recreated, and I really hope it does. I hope that the film gets out there enough that it isn't just recreated in Australia, but here. Like, I spoke to a teacher the other day, and they said this would be amazing for my students. I talked to a mum who was going through a really hard time with her 14-year-old, and she said, I wish my daughter would have seen this. I think this journey that you guys went on needs to be everywhere implemented in some capacity. Which I really love, and I believe the arts is a great way of healing, you know, and getting, allowing people to express themselves differently that might not be the normal, you know, counselling kind of way. I didn't even know that the trip that I was on was for at-risk kids until I did the research on it, and I wondered, because I just thought it was for photography, and then I found out it was for kids that just needed a little bit of help, which was really profound, that moment. And it really got me thinking about what does it mean to be at risk? And, you know, obviously half the reason you're at risk is because you don't even realise you are. You know, you don't see the cracks. You don't even know that you're about to fall into them. So it was really amazing and a bit sad, but also really joyous to go, thank God I was given this opportunity, you know.
So we have something similar. It's called Heldenreise. I don't know. The translation would be hero journey, because you're going to find your own limits and try to step over your limits.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
And make some new impressions and so on.
Yeah, I've heard of, like, there is a trip for young offenders, something similar, but nothing to do. It was more about going out into the bush and hunting and learning how to survive without the mod cons, but nothing with the arts per se, not a photo safari with National Geographic for 2 weeks taking photos, you know, in the 80s. And I don't know, like, a lot of people I've spoken to have never... I mean, it would be an interesting question to ask National Geographic if they've ever thought of doing it again.
So it was National Geographic?
Yeah, it was National Geographic. And it was sponsored by a whole lot of other companies. And it was four boys and four girls. But they never, it was never a counselling. There was nothing to do with talking about your feelings. It was go and take a photo and explore the world through a different lens.
So when did you find your story? You had the base with the journey?
Yeah, well, one of my best friends is also my producer, Lizzie, and we have been dying to do another project together, because we did The Turning, which is a Tim Winton anthology, and we went, we knew our next project was going to be the feature, and we said, well, what's the story? And we had all these ideas, and then one day Lizzie rang me and she goes, what about that great yarn you told me about when you were 14? I'm like, oh my God, that's a great story. And so we just went, this is a story we want to tell. And of course I didn't know anything about what the other kids were there for, because as I said, I didn't even know it was for at-risk kids. We never talked about our feelings. and so it was very much inspired by my own experience growing up the way I did, and then also my extended family, my sister, my cousins, my aunties, my uncles, brothers. I mean, and in Aboriginal culture, when I say family, it's like hundreds and hundreds of us, you know. So I had a big pool of people with shared experiences to kind of draw on what these characters are going through, Indigenous and non-Indigenous, you know. Because I think that's the thing about trauma, like genuine, real trauma, it's colorblind, you know. Mm. Trauma is, if something really bad is going to happen to you, it's going to affect everyone the same way.
So I wasn't wondering anymore about auntie and uncle, because I already realized that through other Australian movies. But at the beginning, it was very new. Why is he uncle? auntie, what's going on?
Yeah.
But if you say it that way, it's family.
Yes, it's family. And I do find I've only really started to discover there's a lot of other cultures around the world, Italian cultures, Spanish, Asian cultures, where they call their elders auntie, uncle, nan. You know, that's a common kind of thread of respect also. But in my culture, you are... I don't know what a second cousin is. Like, that doesn't exist to us. That's not a word for us. I don't understand it even to this day. And I don't want to know it because it seems wrong. But everybody, for example, my grandmother had 8 sisters. And all of those 8 sisters are my grandparents' grandmothers. And all of their children are my mums and dads. And all of their children are my brothers and sisters. And my grandfather had 5 brothers and 3 sisters. So all of his siblings are my grandparents, and we 100%, that's our family unit. And so it goes like this, and it goes like that, and it gets bigger and bigger, and all of my cousins' children are my sons and daughters. I'm a great grandmother, you know. It's like, it's just this huge network, and we all have the shared experience of generational trauma, colonization, social disparities. We all have this shared stories that it's just this pool of knowledge to draw from these characters, you know.
So you wrote the story. How long did it take you to write the script and to finish it, and how many versions? 18.
Oh my god. It took probably about 7 years, I reckon, to write the script. I was really lucky because in the first couple of drafts, I had my beautiful friend Stevie Rogers come on board and really help me eke out these characters, who these little pussycats were. With Lizzie, my producer, one of my besties, she's really creative as well. And just try and understand who will be on this trip with us. And then the last couple of years, I went off and I plodded along, and then I brought this beautiful woman, Louise Goff, on board, who was my script editor and just helped really eke out the story, you know. And so I had all these great collaborators that helped me see my story and just refine it and finesse it. And so that was about 7 years. And then to get it all up and the funding, and then COVID hit and the setbacks and the pre-production complications of all of that with lockdowns, it wasn't until probably 10 years later that we got it, our first premiere.
No. Yeah. Oh, okay. And then you needed to find your main character. Was she the first one you found?
We were so lucky. I always feel like Shantae found us. You know, we just put this call out and she was like, here I am. I'm like, oh my God, yes, there you are. Because I thought, I was terrified of finding Mara because I needed to find a young Indigenous actress, which there weren't that many. You know, we've only just had this opportunity to have more of our stories told in Australia in the last 7 years, maybe, when I started writing the script. And so the pool of experienced actors was really hard. And I love a challenge. I would have gotten anyone right for the role and worked with them as a director to give them that chance to step up to the plate. I'm all about, I work with a lot of non-actors, actually. I love it. I love it. But Shantae we were so lucky because she had so much experience already, and she knew that character. I could feel it in her heart that she knew who Mara was. And all of the auditions I did remotely because of COVID, it was all online, and all the conversations. But, you know, you can just... It actually worked really funnily because it needed to translate on screen anyway. And they were already showing me that on the Zoom. I'm like, if they can do that on a Zoom, imagine when we get them together on set. And so I was very, very lucky. And Shantae, I just love working with her. She's such a considered young actor. And her heart is so big and generous. And she just shone when the camera was on. She just knew where she had needed to be and where she needed to get to. So it was, and then everyone joined the party. It was at the cast and crew. My cast was so beautiful. I just love them all. I love everybody.
So how long did it take to find the whole cast? So it was a process about a few months, and then you started shooting.
We did a really extensive call out across Australia, and our casting director had to buy new storage for her Dropbox because hundreds, and hundreds, because we said no acting experience required, you know, just who's right for the role. And so we just got everybody. But, you really do see, it's quite a quick process then to go through. And it took a couple of months to get Mitch and Carlos, Fernando, you know, to get the carers who was going to travel with them. And I was so lucky because one of my darling friends, Tasma, you know, she's my sister from another mister. She was just so the heart, you know, she just shone as the heart of this, really, of the story as well. And it was once we knew who Mara was, it was easy to find the people around her, because that's the main thing. You need to know who works with your protagonist. And these people just fit really beautiful. The two young non-Indigenous actors had never acted before in their lives, but they knew each other. And it was so great when I finally did get to the final auditions and I got to fly to meet them. And was when they were passing each other in the hallway, they're like, "Hey, oh my God, it's you!" And I was like, "Oh, this is great. They know each other, and they like each other. So it'll be great to get them together on this set, on this big long journey that they're going to have to go on." You know, the last thing I wanted was, you know, clashing personalities.
The social setting is not that easy, so we have a lot of trouble. For the kids at home, that's why they do the journey as well. Mm-hmm. So is there a system in Australia to work with this trouble, to help the kids and not only to...
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Because a lot of the trauma, a lot of the troubled teens and at risk, some of it's got to do with mental health. And I don't think there's any country in the world that knows how to deal with mental health. And mental health can come from generational trauma. It can come from sexual abuse. It can come from physical, domestic violence. It can come from drug addictions. It can come from so many things. And I don't think there's enough places that are equipped with dealing with that. And so they look at ways of locking up hiding it away, then finding preventative. So there's, you know, there's, what is it? What's that saying? It's like prevent before instead of cure, you know? So, and it's so hard because young adults are constantly changing because of all the information that they're inundated with, and some of it good and some of it can be bad. But that's their own journey. I'll never be the person to tell them what they should and shouldn't do. I wouldn't do that to anybody. Good luck to anyone telling me what to do. Or you or me or, you know, somebody, anybody, them. But, look, I think people are always hopeful. I mean, I'm a terrible optimist. That's an oxymoron, isn't it? A terrible optimist. But I hope that there is genuine change and help out there for people that are on the cusp of going this way in their life and that. I think I was super lucky because, you know, as an Indigenous person, we never had a written language, okay? So everything that we ever did since the first sunrise was sing and dance and paint. That's how we told our story. So I think we're just natural storytellers. And I did grow up under the mango tree with everyone playing the guitar and singing, and it was just like every day. And then I went on to do more in the arts because my Uncle Jimmy Chai wrote Brand New Day, which was the first Aboriginal musical, and my mum and everyone toured with it. And I toured for 4 years after the photo safari, so I was not going anywhere. I was in the arts, that was it. But if I don't know where any of the kids are after that trip, you know, I don't know what it did for them, but I really hope that it did something because it changed my life. I remember the very pivotal moment in the trip that I realised that there was something outside of the town, and because I grew up in a mining town and everyone just went to the mines, and I just knew my whatever was in my spirit and in my heart didn't belong in a mine. So it was amazing.
How did you plot the road trip for the movie? What did you want to show?
Well, because on my trip, we went from Port Hedland all the way down to Perth, which is about a 28-hour drive. But on our trip, we did it over 2 weeks because we stopped and looked at places. Well, we couldn't do that. We couldn't afford it. Give me another $20 million, I could have done the whole trip. But we were short, a small budget, low-budget feature film. which I think we still did amazingly, but we condensed it to the Pilbara. And the Pilbara is such a smorgasbord of desert, river, sea, that we were able to still encompass so many different elements of what makes the state so beautiful and country so beautiful. Even damaged country is still so beautiful. And it's lamenting, you know, and it's need to heal. And I think that we showed just around Port Hedland and Karajini, which is all in the Pilbara, and we are the first feature film to ever be given permission to shoot in Karajini as well. So it was a great honour because we did the proper protocols with talking to all the First Nations people there about coming in and to a really sacred place for them. It's Karajini is extraordinary. And we actually had a kid in the audience today go, is that place real? They thought it was CGI because it was such an amazing, they just had never seen anything like it. And I was like, oh my God, it's real. It's real. It's like there's these places in the world that are just breathtakingly incredible and so precious and important. Yeah.
So what we can feel in the audience when we watch the movie is the kids in the movie, or the characters, they already have a connection to the land. Where does this connection come from?
Yeah, well, for us, First Nations people, country is a sentient being. It's alive. It's not like a piece of dirt or a branch. It's like a vein. It's a breathing, living Mother Nature on steroids. Like, it's our family, and we respect it is thus, and making sure that is in integrated into not just the story, but even what we as cast and crew were doing and preparing on that country. And so even the welcome to country in the acknowledgement to country in the film was something that we practiced every time we were in a different area that we were shooting, like properly, just to make sure that maintained. So country became a character, you know, and it helped us tell Mother's story, actually, because when she was enclosed, our world around her was enclosed. And the more she opened up, the more we opened up to country, the more we saw sky, the more our frame went to wide. It was like it responded to her because she's connected to country. And that's how we, you know, even when we were in the gorges, you could see up or out, or when she was like afraid, we were in tight into the, but it was still, she was discovering why she was afraid because she cared. It was so beautiful talking to Katie Millwright, my cinematographer, to make sure that we captured that essence as a young First Nations woman being on country and how she integrated that into the story and the people around her. So, yeah.
And at the same time, you are dealing with sexual abuse, suicide, and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, that's as I was saying that the non-Indigenous characters are also dealing, like Kylie's dealing with domestic violence as a young, you know, she's 16 and her partner is like 22. And that's a man that shouldn't be taking advantage of a young girl that's obviously thinks that her only worth is her body. We talked about what her mum was like, that's why she turns around and says that terrible thing before she leaves, you know, mum, keep your hands off my man. She just can't trust anyone around her, and she thinks sex is the only commodity, which is why she says to Mother, you know, when Mother says, well, how do you know someone likes you? Very innocent, revealing question, and Mother put herself on the line there, and Kylie goes, because I want to fuck you. That's it. That's all she understands. And it's a really blunt line in the film, and we usually get a couple of gasps, but it's just how Kylie works. And with Sean, you know, we talked about why he's suicidal, and we had this whole story about it. But, you know, and they're conversations that I'm sure that the actor would feel more comfortable talking about because it was some of his lived experience as well. Even with Elvis's character, you know, when he gets grabbed in the street and beaten to almost to death. Not having to show that in a flashback or anything, but everyone understands what violence looks like and racial violence looks like. And we had had that happen in our town to young Indigenous kids. So it wasn't something that I pulled out of the air for shock value. It's like, this is what happens. It's what still happens. You see in Warwick Thornton's film, Samson and Delilah, you know, that happens. And it happened in my hometown, you know, and with my kids when I was 14. And even Mitch, a very simple line that Mitch says, oh, hello, when Pop Jimmy's there, and he's like, hey, where are you from? And she goes, oh, we're from over east, but my mum's still looking for our mob. Straight away, all of my mob, when they heard that line, they went, oh, she's stolen. Her family are stolen generation. She don't know where her mob's from. Everyone knows where your mob is from. And when a black fella says that they don't know where their mob is from, they're stolen. So that one line in that one moment was so much to so many of my mob in the audience, and that will ever see it, you know, they'll go, oh. And when he says, you're right, you got family here, and you can see it in Mitch's face, and she goes, thank you, uncle, because it means so much to belong. There's so many little things, like every line in the film I didn't put there for nothing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's hard to get for me as a European citizen from Germany, so. But it helps a lot how they socialize and get comfortably to each other.
Yeah.
That works quite good in 7 days.
Yeah,
I know. It should be 14 days, a week, a month.
Oh, look, yeah, it would be amazing. I think we did the trip for two weeks, but yeah, we were going, well, if it's just around that area, it'll be for this amount of time. But, you know, give or take, creative license. But yeah, no, I think when you realize that you've got a shed, there's something about, like Mara, she says at the end, you know, I just want a mum to see me. And I think that's a lot of things with young adults that aren't with their families, that are either in foster care or something, or even in juvie detention, or anybody, even an adult, you know, I just want someone to hear me. I want to be relevant. I want to be important. I don't want to be the president of the world. I just want at least to not be invisible, you know. I'm not, no one should be ever feel that way, you know. I think everyone's story is important. Everybody is important.
And you wanted to paint a very wonderful happy ending. And I really would hope for these kids to have this wonderful ending. Is it realistic?
Well, you know, it's funny because it's not really that happy an ending if you really look at it, because they go on this great trip, but Kylie's, you know, she still jumps in the car where her mum's just like, let's get the hell out of here. Sean, you know, you go, okay, there's something that could possibly be working here. He's smart. He seems a bit happier, but we know what depression's like. It's on and off. Yes, Elvis has gone to the... I really love Elvis's story too, because he has got the most amazing supportive family, and what happened to him was external. A lot of the stuff that happens to the others are internal. This was an external thing that happened to Elvis. He was beaten almost to death by other people outside of his family unit. Mara doesn't go home to her mum. Like, very clearly she says to her mum at the end, her mum says, why don't you stay here tonight and we can look at your slides? She's like, yeah, I'll let Uncle Ian know. So she doesn't live with her mum. She lives with Uncle Ian. So I definitely didn't want it to be, oh, yay, look at her living with her mum. Everything's so awesome. It's like them two got things to work out, you know, and Mother's got the sensibility now and knows that, you know, I don't need this to be my life. When Mitch says, what do you want after this, Mother? She goes, actually, I don't want to go back to the way it was. I want to work on it. So, yeah.
Yeah, you have to work in everything.
yeah, all
so
the time.
What was the hardest point during the shoot beside COVID?
The heat. it was so hot. But honest to God, every single moment was so joyous. It's very hard for me to say what was really hard, because even the hard bits were done so amazingly because we were all together and everyone was so committed. Like, I was working with so many friends it was like a whole bunch of friends running off to make a movie. I'd worked with so many of the crew on so many other projects in the remote West Australian outback, so I knew that they had the grunt, the experience. They knew what was coming at them and they were prepared. I think it would have been really hard if I'm not sure. I have experienced crew that have never stepped foot outside of the city, and it is a very hard process to kind of understand the heat of the Northwest. And so I made sure the majority of my crew, you know, it's like trying to go on a wilderness documentary and with a crew that lives in apartments and, you know, they need to know what the bush is like. And my crew did. So every day, and my cast were amazing, and they were looked after, and they did too. Most of my cast knew, like Pedro, who played Elvis, he lives in Northern Territory, you know, outside of Alice Springs. You know, Mark, Cole Smith and Nari, who are my cousins, they live in the Kimberleys and in, you know, in a coastal town in the bush. And Tasma's, you know, she's experienced living in all those. So everybody knew what they're up for. So it was great. The only thing I can say is that, you know, with every single film, you just want more money. If I had more money, maybe the trip could have gone longer, and we could have seen more of the West, you know, where the story could have taken them. It could have been a month-long trip. But I really loved, in my own way, I loved what we had and where we could go. Trying to film a road trip in a remote northwest where everything goes up 90%. Because you're in a mining area, we did as best as we could, and I think we did marvelously.
And we are not talking about dangerous spiders and snakes. And
I've got a very funny story about a spider. There was this enormous spider, and no one believed me, but somehow somebody got a photo because they were trying to take a photo in the direction of where I was screaming. And when they zoomed in, this spider was the size of a saucepan. It was enormous, probably completely non-venomous, because when they're that big, they don't need to have poison, because they can just grab you by sheer brute. But yeah, of course, Australia, everywhere we had protocols for safety, because everything can kill you. We were in country where snakes will take you out in 10 minutes and you're 30 minutes, an hour down in a gorge with no way to get out. And so we had to be really careful where we were. But this is why you do a welcome to country, because then the ancestors will look after you and no one got bitten.
What was the funniest scene to shoot? Was it at the swimming or... in the bus.
Oh, the funniest thing to shoot was after they'd gone hunting and they were walking up the riverbed and they had like doing all of these kind of things and the bush turkey and the pool, you know, and all of that was quite funny. We really enjoyed that, and the swimming pool. The kids loved that because it was heated. The pool, it's weird because it was only probably about 27 degrees out, but that's cold for us, you know. And so the pool had to be heated. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning and we were all struggling. And, you know, when you get that manic kind of exhausted and everyone was just laughing, and we had to, oh my God, you don't even want to know. We had to re-rig the underwater cam, and our first AC was just a genius, and we didn't think we could pull it off. It's so much. The manicness of that night definitely would have been my favorite.
The movie's here now at the Berlinale. Where is it going next?
I'm pretty sure it's been announced, but we got into Maori land, which has been also a dream of mine to go to, because we're very strong with our sisters and brothers across the ditch, as we like to say, in New Zealand. With the First Nations people there, we just, we're such close allies, and we love each other very much. And so it's such a joy to go over there and bring my film there, because I know that it'll resonate with a lot of the First Nations people there as well. And we always share our stories. They have stories come over to our festivals and et cetera, et cetera. So that's really lovely. And then I go to the, in Melbourne, the Buranga. Oh my God, I can't believe it. It's a First Nations Film Festival. Oh my God, Buranga. Sorry, I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing it wrong. I feel really, really, really bad. But it's going there, and then it's going through Indo at the moment, Indonesia at the moment. It's it's India. It's going to a whole lot of other festivals that, you know, we're just so, so happy that it's getting a chance to go to lots of different audiences.
Direkt nach der Preisverleihung traf ich noch mal kurz auf Jupe Clark.
Are you kind of happy right now?
I don't know, maybe. I'm completely ecstatic and in a bit of shock, yes.
It's so wonderful from the children jury to give you the crystal bare. It's fantastic.
It's quite extraordinary to get the reception that we did and for the children's jury to see whatever it is that they captured in their heart from the film that made them award us this. It's just, it means so much, actually. It's incredible. Such an honour to be celebrated by children. Oh, my God.
I'm so happy to be here. I just can't believe we get to be part of this festival and, experience the reception that we've got. It's really so, so nice, isn't it? And that people really responded to the film and really loved it.
Already posted anything in your actors group?
No, we haven't posted anything yet, but we have immediately sent a photo to a video message and a photo to Liz Carney, our producer.
Okay, that's perfect. Hopefully it's going to help the movie getting distributed not only around the world, in Germany as well.
Well, this is our trifecta. Which I was really, really, I can't believe we could actually say now that we've got our trifecta from MIF and TIFF and BIFF. And so I really do hope that it helps with our distribution, worldwide distribution. Yeah.
So thank you and party on.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Den Hauptpreis für den besten Kurzfilm von der internationalen Jury in Generation K+ gab es für den Film Waking Up in Silence, der auf Ukrainisch, Deutsch und Russisch gedreht wurde. Eine Koproduktion von Mila Sutlenko und Daniel Asadi-Fesi.
Uns ist der Atem weggeblieben, das fühlt sich ganz toll an.
Es ist eine Riesenehre, mit so einem Film hier erstmal Weltpremiere feiern zu dürfen und dann auch noch den Hauptpreis der Jury zu bekommen. Das hätten wir wirklich nicht erwartet.
Zwischen all den tollen Filmen den Preis zu kriegen, ist es wirklich eine große Ehre, weil der Wettbewerb ist sehr stark. Es gibt so viel Tolles hier zu sehen.
Das wäre meine nächste Frage gewesen. Wie hat es sich angefühlt, hier zu sein und auch andere tolle Filme zu sehen?
Ja, eine Mischung aus Wertschätzung für die Arbeit der anderen, aber auch einfach Begeisterung für Filme, für volle Kinosäle, was die Berlinale immer toll schafft. Tolle Publikumsgespräche nach den Filmen. Also wir hatten unglaubliche 10 Tage hier.
Und wir finden, dass die Programmation eine ganz tolle Arbeit leistet, diesen Mix zu schaffen. Also wir haben natürlich nicht alle Filme gesehen, aber das, was wir gesehen haben, hat sich immer gegenseitig komplementiert und hatte irgendwie einen roten Faden. Und ja, es sind ganz tolle Filme hier. Sehr empfehlenswert.
Was die Q&As angeht, irgendwelche spannenden Fragen noch im Kopf, die euch begeistert haben vom Publikum?
Ja, es gab einen Jungen namens Hugo und er hat einmal gefragt, warum wir den Film so gedreht haben, dass man das Gefühl hat, dass die Kinder, die in der Kaserne leben, wie in einem Gefängnis sind, weil da so viele Zäune sind. Und das ist ihm aufgefallen. Das fanden wir irgendwie sehr erwachsen von einem 8-jährigen Jungen, so eine Frage zu stellen und so eine analytische Herangehensweise an den Film an den Tag zu bringen.
Und andere tolle Erlebnisse während der Berlinale mit dem Film?
Das Erlebnis, was uns nie aus dem Kopf gehen wird, ist die Weltpremiere von dem Film im Zoo mit allen unseren Protagonistinnen und Protagonisten. Einfach diesen ganzen Kindern, die vor einem Jahr aus der Ukraine nach Deutschland fliehen mussten, auch diese Plattform geben zu können, ihnen das Gefühl geben zu können, sie werden hier gesehen, war einfach noch viel schöner, als den Film allein zu zeigen.
Er ist jetzt hier auf der Berlinale zu sehen gewesen. Wo geht's hin mit dem Film?
Also wir hoffen, dass der Film auf vielen nationalen und internationalen Festivals gezeigt wird, dass wir viel in Kontakt mit dem Publikum kommen können und dass wir dieses Thema, was der Film behandelt, Menschen, die geflüchtet sind vor dem Angriffskrieg der Russen gegen die Ukraine, in vielen Plattformen besprechen können und aufmerksam drauf machen können.
Apropos Plattformen, gibt es den Film und Infos dazu, Instagram etc., gibt es eine Seite?
Genau, man kann uns persönlich auf Instagram folgen, wenn man das möchte. Und alle weiteren Informationen findet man, denke ich, im Internet dann auch, sei es Instagram oder Facebook. Aber wir posten dort immer die nächsten Screening-Termine. Und da kann man auf dem aktuellen Stand bleiben.
Infos gibt es auch bei Square Eyes, das ist unser Distributor. Da kann man auch was über den Film erfahren und wo die Reise hingeht.
Den Gläsernen Bären für den besten Kurzfilm gab es von der Kinderjury bei K+ für Closing Dynasty von Lloyd Lee Joy, den wir hier im Interview hören.
Congratulations, first of all.
Thank you so much, appreciate it.
Are you happy?
I'm very happy, yeah. It was a long trip here and it's been an incredible experience. You know, it's the first time in Berlin, and just to bring Millie, the little actress here to the city has been a dream.
It's the second time you mentioned the long trip. Why was it so long?
So JFK, the I'm from New York, and the airport decided to catch on fire a little bit, so it canceled many international flights, and just our airline wasn't able to fly us out for a couple days, so we had to like reroute, go to London. It was a 24-hour ordeal, and we finally got here.
It's a beautiful set and scene with the camera. You are not only on the level with your main actress, you are below her level as well. On the floor, we can see everything. Was it the idea from the beginning, or when did you decide to do it this way?
It was important for me to capture the city from her point of view. So we're very conscious of like where we place the camera and seeing sort of the world from her eyes to really feel, you know, how big the city is, but also the oppression and danger of the city. So that was a big thing for us, was to keep the camera sort of from her level.
Did you try and catch some real voices on the street, or was it all scripted, the people walking around talking to her?
There were a lot of people coming up. I mean, imagine seeing a little child peddling roses. There were a lot of people, to our surprise actually, coming up and trying to help her and seeing if she needed help. They gave her money. I think she actually made $10 or $15 of real cash selling roses. And so I would say three or four people in the film are strangers.
Okay. Nice one. So was it really easy to set up the scene in the restaurant and on the streets? Or did you plot a way to go around?
It was very, very planned, everything. We had specific locations that we chose, but we did want to keep a certain spontaneity and freedom. So we in a lot of situations, we just placed her, we stayed further away and kind of observed from afar and see kind of what happened naturally. And so there's a mix of improv and scripted dialogue in the street scenes especially. But the restaurant was very, I wanted that scene to feel very quiet, very still, very different from the city scenes. So it's very quite different stylistically.
And we as the audience know the restaurant is going to close down. She doesn't.
Exactly. Yeah, that was sort of the main device and twist I wanted to happen at the end, was sort of that emotional, heart-wrenching moment. You realize this is what she's doing it for. I like to think there's still hope, you know? There's still hope, perhaps, in the future for this family and the restaurant. But from her point of view, we kind of leave in that state of confusion.
And we are talking about her point of view. You found her in Los Angeles and you filmed in New York.
Yes. Yeah, it was a long, lengthy process. Originally, I was actually trying to cast a boy because the film was inspired by a little boy I met in the subway who tried to hustle money from me. He was all alone, and I wanted to recreate that character, that kid I met in real life. But just scouring New York City for the right kid, I just couldn't find him. And so we opened up to girls, and immediately I found this incredible star in Malinka Wanata, and she kind of blew us away. So immediately I just said, she's it. Let's fly her over. We're going to just make this.
The movie's here at the Berlinale now. You get the prize from the children's jury. Where is it going next?
We're premiering the U.S. in 2 weeks, South by Southwest. So it'll be interesting to see the different reaction from a U.S. audience, an English-speaking audience. And we're very excited to go in 2 weeks.
Did you enjoy many other movies here as well?
I only managed to see two movies. I saw Past Lives by Celine Song. That film blew me away. Absolutely stunning, stunning movie. And I saw Kill Baksoon, a Korean sort of action film, which I thoroughly enjoyed as well.
Yeah, it was quite funny. I've seen it as well.
Yeah, one of the best action scenes I think I've ever seen in the restaurant was wild. Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you very much.
And good luck with the future of the movie.
Thank you so much.
Is there going to be a feature project as well?
I'm currently developing a feature right now for another short film Premiered last year at Cannes, and so that we're developing into a full-length movie, hopefully shooting in November. So, yeah.
Domian Rauche schrieb zusammen mit seiner Schwester Wendy Rauche das Drehbuch für den Film Sewong. Er selbst führte Regie. Die Kinderjury der 46. Generation K+ gab dem Film eine lobende Erwähnung als Spielfilm. Es geht um den Umgang mit Verlust und Trauer, eine Geschichte über Monster und anderes mehr. Wir hören den Regisseur und die Drehbuchautorin im Interview.
So, you made the opening film for a generation, but that was not the intention. You were chosen at the opening movie. When did you realize you're going to be that for generation at the Berlinale?
Well, the fact that we were selected for the Berlinale was already crazy, and then we got in January a phone call like, oh hey, you're going to open the section of Generation, and we were like pinching each other like, is this real? It's amazing, and I remember we were talking about it before shooting, like, imagine being on Generation with this film, that would be amazing, and look, now we're here, and yeah, it's surreal, yeah.
Yeah, 4 years ago we were here at the Berlinale working on this script within the Syndicate Script Lab, and I remember there was like another director, and he had his film here at the Generation, and we had a meeting with him, and we were like, oh wow, this guy has his film and it's a Generation, imagine, and it looked like a faraway dream, and now we're here. It's wonderful, it's really wonderful.
So it was a 4-year process, writing and the realization as well?
Yeah, actually five years. Yeah. So we started back in 2018, I think, yeah. And it was actually just at, we were playing badminton together, and we were like having a competition game, and I was like to Wendy, maybe we should, write a story about our father. And I think in 1.5 hours, the others got frustrated by us because we were like brainstorming the whole story. And from that point, it just went on to this script. We found amazing producer, Dries Flippo from A Private View, who really believed in the story. And then just we got funded. Suddenly we start shooting. We are in the editing room. And then you have this film. And so it's a long process. But in the end, it's been so quickly. Yeah. Mm.
So what was quickly? The process of shooting as well?
No, I think just the development was in times of COVID, people had time to read, so people were like already invested in the film, and we got funded by our government and by the Netherlands and by Eurimage, and then suddenly we found our actress, and I think that was the most important thing, is like we will not shoot before we find our main character, because she's in every scene, she has to do crazy stunts, and as soon as we found her, the producer said, because we were in doubt, we will shoot this year or the year after, and we found the actress and he said, we have to shoot this year, or else we're gonna lose her, and we have to shoot now. That's, I'm really grateful for that, yeah.
So we can see the qualities of your actresses in the movie as well, but what have you been looking for? Did you say she has to skateboard, already know that she should be possible to talk eloquently, to feel the rage and show it for the audience, and she should swim and dive? And what actress would that be in this age?
And she has to be 12 years old, I think. No, of course, we that was our dream. Like, imagine to have an actress that can speak the local dialect, that can skateboard. So that was in our description. But then we realized the most important is that she understands the story. It's what's the important thing about it. She really has to have a range from being the most happiest girl in the world, and in the end, she's fighting a monster with all her anger and her grief. But Saar, she's so natural. She's very mature for her age, so she understood what the story is about. And then within 5 months' time, she learned to skate, to dive, to hold her breath for a couple of minutes, to sail. And man, that was so amazing to see how she was so dedicated and, okay, I'm going to do this. And wow, yeah, only respect for her, yeah.
How long did it take to find her?
Actually, we were lucky because we thought, okay, this is going to be the hardest thing of all because she's in every scene. And then there was a casting call, and so many girls sent their film. And I think there were like 3 casting days, and I think we had the plan of seeing like 100 girls. And then it was the first casting day. And I got a text message from Domin. It started at 9. At 9:15, we gathered and said, okay, this must be a joke. But it was SARS. She just like entered the room on the first casting day early in the morning, and she nailed it immediately. She was unbelievable. And then, but we couldn't believe it. So, of course, we kept on with the casting days. And then we made like a selection of, I think, I don't know, 10 girls. And then she returned, and she already like used all the feedback that she got. So she was, even on the second day, already that much better. So it was just like hard to believe. Otherwise, we could have like skipped the rest. We're just like, no, this can't be true. So, yeah. We were lucky.
You started with her with the casting, and the other kids are around her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we started with her, and as soon as we found her, we asked her to be part of the other castings, because it was important that the chemistry between the family and the friends are real. And I think for me, I mean, she's 11 years old. She has to be comfortable with the other people. So we got amazing actress as well, and I ask her, like, who do you feel most, you know, what's the chemistry for you with this actor or this actress? And it really helped on set as well, because she already felt good. And then afterwards, we just had some, how do you say it, I think some days where they meet each other and do fun stuff rather than really rehearsing scenes. So that when we started shooting, they were friends. When we started shooting, there was a tiny family already, and on screen it was bam, it was there, and I'm really grateful for that. Yeah.
Yeah, the first day that all the young actors were together, they went on as like a VR game, like a zombie shooting, and they could all shoot the director. I think that was the perfect way to start the whole process. Yeah, they had a lot of fun, which is important, of course.
When we talk about the cast, so I remember the brother who's hip-hop rapping and singing as well. So is he a singer or...?
No, not at all. I think we ask characters to come out of their comfort zones. Either it's like learn how to sail. For him, it was okay. You should learn how to rap. So no, he's not a rapper at all. But we got the help of Brihang, which is a really famous hip hopper in our country, and he sings in the local dialect, and his lyrics are very poetic, very accessible, but very poetic. So he was like the right man for the job. And we asked him, okay, can you read the script? And he was really, really enthusiastic about the script. So with our composer, he wrote the song Pa. And then he was like, so, okay, I really want to help this actor. So he came to set. And then he really helped him like with the right moves, with the way of singing. So this was also an amazing collaboration, and it gave the actor a lot of confidence. So that's why he looks like a rapper in the film. Yeah,
and the last shooting is great. I don't want to spoil anything, but the tears in the eyes and the words coming from... Was it the last shoot, or did you start this scene at the beginning?
When I got the schedule of the shooting days, I was looking, okay, the first scene and the last scene are on the same day in week one. I was like, okay, now we really lock the film at the first week in the range of emotions. So it was a bit scary, but man, I remember that day when the brother was rapping, and this moment happens. The whole crew was silent. I mean, everybody was just standing there looking to each other, and you felt like this moment. And for me, that was, okay, this is the easiest cut in my life to say, because I have the reaction of the whole crew. And actually that wasn't the last scene in the script, but the way she played it, there was for me this like, okay, this shot is perfect, so either the other scene has to be more perfect, but for us it was, yeah, this is how it should end. So yeah, magical moment of shooting, yeah.
That's quite nice.
Yeah. I was crying.
It was one of the technical guys, like a big strong guy, and we came out of the set, and he was like crying as well. It's so cute. So it was very cool to see.
An dieser Stelle geht das Interview noch spannend weiter und mehr zur Berlinale gibt's aber in der nächsten Ausgabe von Lost and Found, die ihr in der Nacht von Mittwoch, den 5. auf Donnerstag, den 6. April hören könnt. Natürlich hier auf der 95.8 bei Radio Z. Ich verabschiede mich für diese Ausgabe. Für euch am Mikrofon und Technik Chris. Ich hoffe, es hat Spaß gemacht zuzuhören und ich empfehle... Und meine Empfehlung, schaut noch im Blog vorbei unter www.fraktalorg.de. Tschüss, bis zur nächsten Ausgabe von Lost and Found. Am Mikrofon und Technik Chris.